The following program is sponsored and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path. And so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again and have a lot to talk about today. I guess before we get started, I'll give my normal disclaimer, which is just because you hear us talk about certain concepts, including today, we're going to do a short segment on local AI. Setups. I know, no doubt I've got listeners that are probably well past my use of AI, and I'll explain that further when we get into that. But the local AI models have really gotten my attention because of some of the positives and some of the concerns that I and other CPAs especially have with financial data of our clients being exposed, and we're highly, highly sensitive to that issue. But in any event, and then I think we're going to spend some more time on the debt problem again. Yeah, we're getting ready to cross over the $40 trillion threshold. Some projections show we're already there when you look at the current year expenditure on interest expense, and so, you know, obviously that's based on a total debt number, but whether we're there or we're simply on the porch, it doesn't really matter. It's so bad, such a huge number. So we'll update some of the reasons and some of the expenses or the types of expenditures that that interest is being incurred for. And then if I have time, I want to spend some more time talking about one of my favorite topics, the Roth type of retirement account. And, you know, I've seen I don't know why there's been just a raft of, well, I do know why. It's because there's people like me talking about undertaking Roth in a very specific fashion. I mean, I've never espoused that everybody needs to do a Roth conversion. That's not at all. And if you think I've said that, well, I apologize, and I'll do my best to try to qualify my remarks in the future. But the Roth definitely does not fit certain scenarios, and you know, I don't have clients in that. Are those scenarios? I've got clients that are in the scenarios of having invested in multifamily syndications, and in that world, the Roth is literally a no-brainer, and especially given all the calamity that's occurred in that space. So we'll talk more about that here as time goes on today. Let me think. I think that's going to give us probably at least three times as much content as we have time for. But again, just because you hear us discuss topics and issues on the show, as I warn every show at the top, do not run off and try what we're speaking about on your own. You know, it's something you should do with your current professionals, your financial professionals, or in the case of AI, your systems folks. And, you know, let's make sure that whatever you thought you heard, first of all, let's make sure you heard it right. And second of all, let's make sure it applies to your fact pattern. And if it doesn't, well, then, you know, let's pull you back into the boat. But in any event, you know, I think that there's so many things that people can try or can execute in today's world that can benefit their use of the tax code as well as technology. I mean, it's just amazing the technological innovation we've had in the finance world, including our industry as CPAs. But for those of you that might not have professionals that can consult on real estate taxation, private partnership syndications, retirement planning, or getting into the zero tax math or tax rate in retirement, you can go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com. And top right, you'll see two links that will help you. You can go to the client forms or intake forms link at the top and complete at least that first form, the client profile. If you have retirement money, I would greatly appreciate you filling out the second form so we can understand what your current status is as to how your retirement funds are positioned. And then if we have that information, we can review it and understand more about you and know what the prospects are that we might be able to work with you to help you achieve your goals and objectives into retirement. And speaking of retirement, if you're not aware, I don't know if you think you're ahead or behind. If you think you've got plenty, take half of it away just mentally, subtract half of it, cut it in half, however you want to get there, and then tell me the answer to that question. Do you think you have enough? And assume you're going to live to, I don't know, your mid-80s, just so we can sync up with even what the IRS thinks of as your life expectancy. And 85 to 86 for us males, 87 to 88 for the females involved. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, I want to remind you that if you haven't already done either the Roth conversion or perhaps you were wise enough to contribute as a Roth, you know, either an IRA or a 401 earlier, which, you know, I'm impressed with how many people these days are getting out ahead and doing that, even though, again, depending on your facts and circumstances, it may not be your best option. And we'll go into the whys and wherefores, but there are reasons that you're shorting yourself on the ultimate goal, which is to generate additional retirement savings at this point in life. Now, if you're older, there may be other reasons. There are other reasons you might consider it, but most of my clients are you know, in their late 50s to mid 60s, and, you know, like many Americans, I have quite a few that are behind on their generating retirement wealth or retirement savings. And they're appalled when they realize, or when they come to realize, that half that money is going to go to their silent partner, which would be the IRS. But in any event, if you want us to consider joining you in terms of your professional advisor team going into retirement, feel free to fill out those forms. And then right next to the forms link is a call link, and you can schedule a call that I'll undertake with you and try to give you some idea of how we can work with you. So, okay. Let's see. Let's start with the U.S. debt clock issue, or the U.S. debt issue. And let's see here. Let me find my window. You know, this U.S. debt clock, I never cease to be amazed at the data that somebody or some multiple somebodies, as the case may be, are crunching to get to the numbers that are represented on this web page. It's truly remarkable. And by the way, there is a mobile version if you want to put that on your phone and be depressed throughout the day without having to look at a computer screen. That is possible. It's hard to see because there's so much going on here, but for those of you that have good vision, it's possible. But in any event, there's all types of, I mean, this screen looks like a pinball machine in terms of the numbers are just flying by. This is a real-time clock on I don't know how many different calculations. I've never bothered to count, and it probably says somewhere on here. But in any event, it shows everything from the U.S. national debt all the way down to the debt for each citizen and then debt per each taxpayer. And you may be surprised to learn that if you're a taxpayer, which I assume most of my listeners are, your share of the national debt is like within $300 of being $360,000. And I can remember, let me see here, we've also got the ability on this website to set, they've got a time machine option where we can back up in time. So hold that $360,000 number in your memory here, and let's back up to, I don't know, the year 2000 as an example. I mean, that's not, for most of my listeners, that's not that long ago, and I'm sure you can remember it, right? And the debt per citizen, if I were doing this live and I had some people to hold their hands up, I'd be really interested to see what people think it may have been 26 years ago. And obviously I'm going to have to tell you in this case, $54,297. That's 20, let's call it 26 years. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to fathom, the difference. I mean, that's over, obviously it's over 300,000, and this is per taxpayer. Per citizen, the amount's much lower because, you know, you're counting every man, woman, and child, whether they file taxes or not. It's 116,000. And you might ask, well, gee, that's a lot of money. What are we spending that on? Well, the interest, which I mentioned earlier, is an egregious category, is now, it's since about a year ago, it's been the third most prolific item. Out of the top four, the interest, well, let me start with number four. Number four, believe it or not, is the U.S. defense expenditure. Is that not amazing? We spend more on interest than we do defending the country or undertaking wars, as the case may be. That's not quite a billion. That's 25 I mean, not quite a trillion. That's 25 billion shy of being $1 trillion. By the way, the total spending, I believe, I know it's on this page, but if my memory's correct, is it's back up over 7 trillion, I believe. So it's a huge number. And of course, the deficit is about 2 trillion, projected as far out the next 10 years. It's basically $2 trillion a year. I mean, it's up and down in that 10-year projection that CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, provides on an annual basis, and then they update that projection throughout the year. It's a ton of money, obviously. And to think how fast it's gotten there from 2000 is just, it's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. But anyway, back to the top four categories. So defense is in the number four slot. Number three, as indicated, is the interest on the debt. And then number two is Social Security, excuse me, at $1.6 trillion, roughly. 1.7, I guess, for rounding up. And then Medicare and Medicaid combined are almost $2 trillion. And then the balance of the $7 trillion in spending, or whatever that number is, I was just scanning this thing to see if I could pick that number off here. I don't see it. It'll probably pop up as I'm talking about some of these other categories. I guess I just need to look for the biggest the biggest categories. By the way, you know, you often hear the debt to GDP, it's expressed as a percent of debt. So the deficit is expressed as a percent of GDP. The U.S. GDP this year's, and this is for the fiscal year that ends in September 30th, $32,671 billion and some change. And that's, you know, obviously less than the $40 trillion. So we're at, what are we at now? It's about 120 something. Looks like it's about 123. It's closer to 123% of GDP. And I guess the size is astounding, but the speed which we got to that level from the report that the Congress was asked to provide Congress back in, I believe it was in the early 2000s, 2009 maybe, if memory serves, back when Paul Ryan was still Speaker of the House. So the letter from Congress to, I mean, from CBO, Congressional Budget Office, to Congress started, "Dear Honorable Ryan." So that's when Paul Ryan was Speaker of the House. They projected in that study that we would hit the 100% of GDP mark. In other words, our debt would be, if we were doing it in real numbers, it'd only be $32 trillion at the 100% mark. They projected we would hit that in, I believe it was 2040 to 42, depending on your assumptions, the interest rates, everything that goes into that calculation on an annual basis, real time for each year. So, you know, like many other things, we overachieve, you know, in the U.S. And when it comes to spending and creating, I guess you could say, money out of thin air that other people around the world perceive has value, you know, we excel. And to think that we could spend even as much as GDP, 100% of it's just amazing to me. And the fact that we can exceed it, and the fact that we don't have any hard asset backing that paper up is just amazing. And I watch the currency I watch the most, just because it affects me, is the Thai baht versus the dollar. And, you know, the Thai baht is no stalwart in the currency world. Occasionally it gets stronger against the dollar, and I just shake my head thinking, what goes into moving those relationships? I mean, the U.S. is in such bad shape. I don't know how any other currency could ever be weaker than the dollar, unless it's somebody like Japan. I mean, Japan's debt to GDP has been as high as 300%+. Now it's down in the, I think it's in the mid 200s. I was trying to look here because that's one of the categories on this webpage. I'm trying to see. It looks like they've moved it around, but let's see. Is it back up top? Oh, yeah, the world debt clocks, I think, will show. Yeah, here it is. So the U.S., well, this is interesting. If you look at the U.S.'s on that page for the world, they're shown as currently as 99%. So I'm not sure what the difference is. Obviously, they're including some debt that on the overall view that's not on this drill down. But anyway, this is relatively correct. So you've got Japan's at 257. That's really the highest one, you know, that's on the big country list. But you go down as low as, 25-26% for places like Taiwan and Turkey. Let me see, who are some of the other ones that are living large? Oh, Greece. Greece is at 165%, and they've had real problems over the past, oh, I don't know, as recently as 10 years ago. I think Greece is the country that almost went under. It may have been, let me think, Italy was also one. Italy's not on this list, so they're not large enough. Or they're not, their numbers aren't as bad, I guess, maybe now. I'm not sure how you make or don't make this list, because there's quite a gap between the 200%, 257% of Japan, and I guess the lowest one here looks like it's in the 20% range. But, you know, the whole world's a mess is basically what this shows. And, you know, I just, you know, I marvel at how, when you think about it, the whole world's, you know, financial, fiscal concerns are hanging by a thread. I mean, when you think about it, and I don't know. You know, you think in the U.S.'s situation, by the way, I see now my debt clock, when I left the page and came back to the overall, it updated, and it is over the $40 trillion mark. I was thinking, when the reason I wanted to talk about it this week is because I had heard in the media that we had finally gone over the $40 trillion mark, so I was, when I first hit this page, I had it up from I was looking at it earlier, a week ago, I guess it was, and I didn't close the window, so it was still sitting on that view. But in any event, understand that this number, this $40 trillion number, is not our total debt. This is the total that affects our current budgetary cycle. We still have the unfunded debt or the unfunded mandates. And, you know, when you look at the additional interest, the total debt is more in the $114 trillion range, not 40. 40 is just the part that's here and now in terms of our annual budget calculations. The unfunded mandates are things that have been, they include initiatives passed by Congress, but they're not scheduled to take effect until later. So we don't include it in the current calculations. So, you know, when we start paying interest, that's not in that annual interest number I gave you, the 1 trillion. I keep thinking small, I'm sorry. The 1 trillion 121 billion, that does not include the additional interest on the unfunded mandate. And of course, you know, we're not paying it yet because we haven't borrowed to cover this spending yet, but that's what's coming. You can count on it. That's definitely in the cards, unless Congress acts to change it, like Social Security, for instance. You know, the Social Security Trust Fund will be totally drained within the next, let's see, we're in 2026, 2034, I believe, is the current ETA. So what is that, another 8 years? And if all this talk of debt doesn't get you, I'll tell you what's going to get you is, for those of you on Social Security, I will be at that point. We're going to get looks like right now, 22% haircut if we don't address this issue in time to ward off the calamity that is going to occur when the debt or the trust fund goes to zero. So, you know, if you were getting, let's just call it, this, for sake of illustration, what, a $20,000 annual Social Security check, or adds up to that if you look at it monthly, on $20,000, you're going to be missing, what, $4,400? I'm doing that in my head. I think that's the number. Hey, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, You can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I was wrapping up the debt clock discussion, and I just wanted to finish the thought that, you know, this concept of the unfunded mandates, the initiatives that Congress has already passed, they've already been signed into future law. And then it's other things like indexing on assorted payments that the government is, you know, think of it as subscriptions. You know, they've got all these subscriptions that keep going up. And, you know, effectively, that's what a lot of the cost of government can be compared to. You know, you've committed. You know, it's like buying that 5-year Wall Street Journal subscription. You know, you, of course, on that, you know what your costs are, and I guess that's part of how they market it, you know, is lock in your savings because our costs are going up. But in the case of the government, there's just a ton of spending that's already dialed in, and it's, again, indexing increases, you know, assorted adjustments that take place on an annual basis as things come in to the budget. But, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see. And in fact, this time machine that is available has a 2030 view. So that's not that far out. And, you know, if we look at that, 2030, well, gee, this is interesting. They've got X's across that. Maybe they've given up on calculating that. I'll have to dig into that offline and figure out what that's really saying. Maybe they're in the process of updating some of their calculations, but in any event, it's quite a look. You know, this debt chart, for those of you that may be interested, also shows things like the tariff revenue that we've collected. You know, it breaks down tax revenues, the U.S., by corporate, state, and gift, excise, you know, income tax revenue. I mean, the tax revenues the country collects is, you know, a lot more than just, you know, the taxes you send in with your return or you have taken out of your payroll. But anyway, usdebtclock.org if you want to learn more, and we'll continue to revisit. I used to do it almost every show a couple years ago, but, you know, at one point we just needed a break. We needed to be able to breathe. So I don't know. I won't do it every show, I promise. But we got to keep our eye on the ball here, and especially this Social Security scenario, because, you know, that's going to be a bad day if we get a 22% drop on the Social Security check, on the recipient's Social Security checks. Okay, let's quickly pivot here to local AI. And I know a lot of my audience probably isn't dialed into AI. You're probably numb from all the attention it gets in the media. And I made a conscious decision about a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, when I would take some educational classes that our CPA Academy offers. That's a group that puts on CPE webinars for our benefit, since we have to attain the requisite number of hours each year of education. I believe it's 40 still, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, we have a guy who's really an expert in this area. I mean, he's really, really good. I want to make it clear, I totally respect the work that this guy's done, who's an instructor. I mean, he also has his own practice, but he also has a training center, and then he also practices. And, you know, he would demonstrate to us certain prompts, and it rarely worked or rarely gave us the right answer. And it wasn't him. He was really good. But I think part of what he was showing us is just how fragile AI models are. And there's different types. Now, it's amazing. Over the last year, the number of new language models is what we call them, that are intelligence models, I guess, artificial intelligence models that have come in, or come onto the playing field. There's choices now, a lot of choices. But they're all, I'm going to say, not quite fully baked in terms of you being able to count on them. I mean, don't go make major decisions based on what gets returned to an AI prompt that you've put in asking a question. And you know, we've got another CPA that has gone, I mean, spent copious amounts of time testing to see if it's anywhere near the point that can process a tax return. And shockingly, I shouldn't say shockingly, because look, AI is doing a lot of things that you would, if you backed up 3 or 4 years, you'd say, there's no way. You know, I've heard more employees say, there's no way it can replace me, right? And let me tell you something, everybody's replaceable. And I mean in the context of AI. And, you know, what these models are doing now is just, I mean, it's scary on the one hand, both good and bad. And yet it shows you that, hey, it's coming. But in any event, the gentleman that was doing a tax return, of course, totally fake, you know, not a real person, not real data, but he was saying, you know, this one product, this one model can do it. The problem is you're exposing the data to the world. Just totally unacceptable in our line of work. That's just a non-starter. And I wouldn't use AI if it was still that way. But now we've got local AI where the data is not put out to the world. Let me just read you just a general, and of course this is an AI answer. on Google. So let's start there. But if I had done this on my own without consulting with Gemini or whatever, I think Gemini is the one that Google has intertwined now in their search results, if you choose that option. It says local AI, this is the official definition. Local AI means running artificial intelligence models directly on your own device, like a laptop, desktop, or local server, so within your four walls, instead of using remote cloud services. Here's why you might choose local AI. Complete privacy is the first bullet point. Your data and your prompts, which those are what you're asking, your queries, let's say, never leave your computer, protecting sensitive personal journals. This is after you've installed now the local AI model that you're choosing to use, or models. And it said, so it never leaves your computer, protecting sensitive personal journals, code. That'd be if you're a developer, you know, the code that you've written for maybe a client or yourself. Maybe you've developed an application. Or business secrets from being logged or used for training. That was bullet one. Bullet two, no cost or subscriptions. This is huge because one of the big surprises with the current models, you know, companies went and signed up for, and I mean specifically small companies where this would matter. I mean, and I say only small companies. No, I'm sure the big companies are saying, wait a minute, you don't think we care when you look at how many chefs are in the kitchen on our subscriptions? It turns into a lot of money. You know, you're getting charged for the tokens. The tokens are the pieces of answers that come back, answers or follow-ups or whatever else you're querying. You get hit for charges, and some of them end up being significant over a month to where, you know, you can set limits and you'll be surprised how quick you bump into the wall. But with the local AI models, there are no monthly fees. Once you're set up, there are fees to get the original, let's say, permit or license. But after that, no monthly fees or token limits. Number three, third reason, you can use local AI anywhere without an internet connection, whether you're on an airplane or facing an outage. That's huge, the way we live today, i.e. on an airplane, or maybe you live in an area where you don't have, or you've got spotty internet connections. So once you get it installed, whichever model your it is, then you're free of the additional cost. I suppose, you know, you'll pay more if you update your subscription to have the latest release. Next bullet point is total control and freedom. You avoid corporate censorship, unexpected API deprecations. Those are the connective, think of it as the connective tissue that keeps AI functioning on your particular system. So at some points, just like you may be using Excel or QuickBooks, where all of a sudden you get a message from Intuit that, hey, we're no longer going to be supporting the DOS version of QuickBooks, as an example. That had a huge following. You've got to upgrade to the Windows version or whatever. So, and then lastly, zero latency. So the responses are coming back to you directly from your own computer where you're not waiting for data to come across the internet. Anyway, those are the reasons people do it. That said, we're coming up to the end of the show here, and I wanted to just introduce this concept to you. We're going to have Mr. AI Wynn starting to join us again on Sunday mornings. I believe this next Sunday he said he would be available. And we're going to get into this local AI, and we can learn together, at least me, because I want to start using this. I like what I'm seeing, and I think it's at a point where we can safely do it, assuming you've got the hardware to do it, and we'll talk more about that next week. So, again, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry we didn't get to the Roth, or not Roth, the anti-Roth conversion today. I'm not sure we'll have time next week, but certainly in the near future. So you can find us right here on KSEV AM 700. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.